Okay. I'm menacing the spot. I'm going to do it. Okay, first I'd like to start out by, of course, acknowledging the presence of my mother, who I don't think I've ever spoke before. Maybe once? Oh, once? Okay. I don't speak that often. I mostly give a Shirnon Gemara, which she probably doesn't want to attend. But I acknowledge her presence. I also want to thank... I have to be closer to the mic. There. I also want to thank the North Miami Beach Kollel, and especially Rabbi Pleasure, who is who I'm very close with, and I'm sure you know is an unbelievable person, and it's a tremendous opportunity for me to speak on behalf of North Miami Beach Kollel and Rabbi Pleasure. And Rabbi Sharfman, my Rebbe, used to always say during our Seder Tshuva, so we can't just change in 1 second and just be completely new people. That's the guys who lose weight like 50 pounds in 2 days. Everyone knows that they're going to gain it back immediately following the 2 days. All HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us is to do something small. He wants us to take a little bit of time out, learn a little bit of Musar, come to a shir. And the schus that we're coming out tonight, when people have busy schedules on a Sunday night before Yom Kippur, and the schus that we're coming out and showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we are willing to take a step. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should see that and wish all, grant all of us a Gemar Chasim Taiva. We'll start out with Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. I was going to tell a joke. You want to hear a joke? The end, it's boring to tell a joke, but we'll start it like this. Reuven, I'll tell a joke. I'll tell a joke. Because the joke actually is, it has a little bit of a message, and it's quick. There is a man who's having a very good marriage, everything's going well, and he finally decides, after 30 years, that things are going so well, but there's one thing that's just driving him nuts. His wife doesn't hear him anymore. And everything that he's asking his wife, she just is falling on deaf ears. Is she ignoring him? Maybe it's just something wrong with her hearing. And he goes to the doctor. How do you know if your wife is just doing that out of spite? Or maybe she really has a physical condition. Maybe she just doesn't hear that well. So the doctor says, here's what you're going to do. You're going to stand behind her about 10 feet and ask her something simple like, what's for dinner? And you'll see if she responds. And then you go closer and closer. And you'll finally see what the issue is. If she responds, you know, within a few feet, then obviously you'll then realize that the issue was her hearing. But when you get closer, then she can hear. Listen, she's getting older. And you'll be able to figure out the issue. So he's 10 feet away, and he says, what's for dinner? No response. 8 feet away, what's for dinner? No response. He finally is 2 feet away, he says, what's for dinner? And the wife says, for the third time, chicken! The point is, and I think we're going to talk about this tonight, because it's a joke, but it's also true. The point is that I think that during these times, we have to analyze our actions and make sure that we're analyzing our actions properly, that we really see the things that we do wrong. It's very easy for us to see what the other person is doing wrong. She's the one with the hearing issue. The question is, can we see the things that we do wrong? We're going to go through a few different sources and try to develop this. We'll start out now with Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are in business. They get together, three partners, and they have an amazing business. They're in the flower industry. They bring flowers to chasanas, bar mitzvahs, any occasion. And they're doing well, until they're not. Business is not going that well. They get together every year. They have their accountant. They go through the numbers. And every single year, they're noticing that the numbers are getting less and less. Year one, year two, year three, it's starting to dwindle. They had success for many years. But now it's starting to dwindle until finally that 1 year they're sitting there. And they say, listen, by the time we get here next year, we're going to probably be bankrupt. We have to do something drastic. Because we're not going to make it until next year the way that we're going. Things just are not working out the way that they used to. So Levi has an unbelievable idea. Listen, guys, we got to do something out of the box. You know, there's a lot of flower companies out there. We can't just do the same thing that everyone else is doing. Everyone has the same price. Maybe they'll beat our price. They have a better product. We got to do something different. We got to do something completely, something that will shock the market. What do you have in mind, Levi? Levi has an idea. We have to just start raising the level of our quality to the extent that we have like royal flowers, things that would be fit for a king, things that no one's ever seen before. Well, that's great. And where are you going to get that from? Well, Levi says, this is the complicated part. And here's my idea. You know, the king has a palace, you know, at the edge of the city, that huge palace. No one ever goes near there. He has an unbelievable flower garden. We can sneak in there in the middle of the night. Yeah. And we can, you know, we have a plan, we can get around the guards. And we're going to steal a bunch of flowers, and we're going to advertise royal flowers. He'll never know. He has a huge garden. You think he knows about every flower in his garden? He'll never know the difference. And we'll have an unbelievable edge on the market. We're going to sell, literally, royal flowers. Unbelievable marketing, unbelievable strategy, out of the box.
It's a little bit risky getting the flowers. But besides that, it's something which can really jumpstart our business and we can get back on our feet, guys. We have no chance. We have no choice. Desperate times calls for desperate measures. Reuven and Shimon were not originally on board with this, but when they realize they have families to feed, they shake hands, they're in. It's going to be Wednesday night at midnight. They're all going to meet in front of the king's palace. And we're going to go and break into the king's palace and steal the flowers. They all meet there as planned. They're nervous, they're shaking, it's midnight. They have the plan, they have the map of the palace, they got everything they could get, all the preparations they can make, but within a few minutes, it's not even close. They're caught, and before they can even realize what's happening, they find themselves on the bottom of a dungeon inside of the palace. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Levi, what kind of a mess did you get us into? Why did you tell us this idea? It was the worst thing, it was so risky. Now, instead of having a bad business, we're going to be executed. We don't have a chance. You break into the king's palace, they've heard stories from before, there's no chance. They're going to be executed. And they were crying, they were desperate, they didn't know what to do. Levi notices in the back of the cell, while they were sitting there crying and bemoaning their fate, there's a shovel in the back of the cell. Someone must have left it there. It was like a dusty shovel. Guards probably never went in the cell. They didn't even know it was there. Instead, I have a brilliant idea. We're going to dig our way. The guards are going to walk away. We're going to start digging. We're going to dig like we've never dug before. And we're going to get out of this tunnel. We're going to get out of here. So, thinking about it, next morning comes and the guard comes to check on all the prisoners. And here's what he finds. Comes to the cell. He sees a hole. He sees Levi's gone. Shimon's gone. And Reuven's still standing there right next to a huge gaping hole in the ground of the cell. And the guard screams at him, "You fool! There's a hole in the ground. Why didn't you leave? What's wrong with you?" And he whacks him and he hits him and he's screaming at him, "How stupid can you be?" This says the Medrash on Keheles Rabbah and Perek Zion. The Medrash says that this is each and every single one of us. We are Mr. Reuven. Why? Because we stand there in our Averos. We also did transgression against the king. The same way Reuven did. He faced execution. We face punishment for the things that we've done throughout the year. Everyone's done something wrong. And we have an unbelievable opportunity to get out of it. We can get out of the situation. There's an escape route. There's an easy escape route. But we don't take it. We have tshuva. We have tefillah. Let me tell you a little something about tshuva and tefillah for a second. The Gemara in Yuma says, you know that everyone knows the story of Purim. It was one of the most complete decrees on an entire nation. One of the most drastic decrees, dangerous decrees that we faced. We were facing complete annihilation in the story of Purim. And as a community, we got together, tshuva and tefillah, and we overcame. We had the gezerah ripped up in Shemayim, literally. There was a gezerah, complete annihilation, ripped up, tshuva and tefillah. Unbelievable power as a community when we got together. The Gemara in Yuma, this is not a modern rabbi saying this, this is a Gemara in Masechus Yuma, Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph. You can check it up if you don't believe me. The Gemara says that during the Aser Simei Tshuva, each and every one of us has that ability, that executive power, we're going to call it, the same power that the community had in the time of Purim to have decrees ripped up. Each and every one of us individually has during Aser Shemei Tshuva. Dirshu Hashem Behimatzai, search out Hashem when he's found. When he's found during Aser Shemei Tshuva, that's when he's found. Each and every one of us has that executive power, but we don't use it. Says the Medrash in Keheles, that's us, that's Reuven. We're Reuven. Because we have the situation, we're in a difficult predicament, and what do? We don't take the escape route. Now I have a question. What in the world did Reuven do so bad? That we're sitting here, this is the Medrash. It started out as a nice story, but this is actually a Medrash. I made it a little bit dramatic. I don't think they're in the flower business in the Medrash. But either way, it's Reuven, Shimon, Levi in the bottom of a dungeon. This is the Medrash, brought by the Shari Truva Rishon. This is the example of a guy who just missed the boat and didn't take the escape route. I have a question. What did he do so bad? He realized that he did something wrong. In all honesty, he actually did break into the king's palace. He was trying to steal the king's flowers, for which there's a punishment. And he, instead of running away and facing the judge, he stayed to accept his punishment. Is that so bad? All the Mefarshim ask on this Medrash, on this Shari Tshuva, What if this is the example of a guy who missed the boat? This is an example of an honest man who was willing to take his punishment. Right? The kids in class, you always hate those kids that make trouble and then they run away. And then there's one kid standing there holding it. And he gets in trouble. But everybody else, are they much better because they ran away? Is that what we're saying? That if you make a mistake, run away? And this is the example? Reuven is the example of a fool who doesn't take his opportunity on the escape route? It's perplexing that Reuven would be the man who we would look at as the fool, who we should look at ourselves and say, we missed the boat as well. The Dalet Teshuvah and other Mefarshim on the Shaar HaTshuva explain a very powerful thing. You know why Reuven didn't leave? It's not because he was honest. What the Medrash is bringing out of this mashal is, Reuven doesn't leave because he doesn't appreciate the situation that he's in. He doesn't respect the fact that the king is really going to kill him. Kill him, shmill him, it's not going to happen. He doesn't really feel the danger of his situation. Why run away? I have nothing to fear. Shimon and Levi, they're afraid for, this is a king. He's going to kill us. There's a hole there, they jump in, the first guy's out. Reuven, he doesn't, why should I run? You only run if you have something to run away from. He doesn't recognize the dangerous situation that he's in. God forbid if someone has a fire in their house in the kitchen, and he's sitting there, right, and he says, you know what? It's in the kitchen. How about this? I'm going to finish a phone call, right? I have two more chapters in my book, and then I'll call the fire department. What's the big deal? You know who says that? Somebody who doesn't understand what a fire is. That's who says that. Someone who sees a fire, or either he doesn't notice it, or he doesn't know what it's going to do. But if somebody knows and has stories of the danger that fire, the damage and the danger that fire has caused, doesn't have that attitude. He's not finishing a phone call. He's not going to read two more chapters in his book. He trips over himself looking for a phone to call the fire department to save the rest of his house because he knows that in minutes his entire house, God forbid, can be destroyed. You know who doesn't do tshuva? Someone who doesn't realize the severity of the averos that he's done during the year. That's who doesn't do tshuva. Because if we recognize the situation that we've got ourselves into by doing the averos that we've done, then you would have to be a fool not to be looking for a way out. You would have to be crazy. You have an escape route. You have executive power. Dav Yud Ches and Yuma says that each and every one of us can rip up any decree. If I went to somebody and said, listen, here's a pen and a paper. Don't ask any questions. This comes directly from God. Just write down what you want for the year and it's given to you. Come back tomorrow. I'll be out of here. Of course. We're writing. Before he even finishes talking, we need a lot of things. We're writing. But the reason why we don't do that is because we don't recognize the averus that we've done. We don't think that we really need an escape route? Is it really so drastic? Someone who doesn't appreciate a fire doesn't call the fire department. Someone doesn't appreciate an avera is not looking for an escape route, is not looking to do tshuva. The Shaar HaTshuva saying is that if you're like Reuven and you don't even appreciate the situation that you're in, you don't understand that you're going to be executed. It could be in minutes they can come and grab you out, and you don't have a schedule. You're in a dungeon. They'll grab you out and the sentence is to die, and that's it. Any minute. You know who doesn't jump in that hole? Someone who doesn't appreciate that, who doesn't respect that. And that's the issue, says the Shaar HaTshuva. The person who doesn't do tshuva is saying that I don't recognize the severity and danger of the situation that I've placed myself in by doing averos. And it's a very dangerous thing because we have an easy way out, which we don't utilize properly because we don't feel like we need to. To bring out this point, there is a Gemara in Brachos, Daf Hei Amud Aleph. The Gemara in Brachos brings down that we are challenged. We are given challenges from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Many of us know firsthand that we are challenged with different things. God does, we always believe that God does exactly what we can handle and what's good for us, but it's much more than that. The Gemara says God is challenging you for a reason. Says the Gemara in Daf Hei Amud Aleph and Brachos, if you feel the Yisurin, if you feel a challenge from God, then you must realize that it's a direct message. You need to change something. That's why you're facing those challenges. It's the Gemara. The Gemara says, look in your actions. Find the things that you need to change. What if you don't find anything? What if you look into your actions? A lot of people will have this, right? Look at that. I can't find anything that I'm doing wrong. Probably most people will say that. Or they'll find the thing that they really don't have to work on because that's easy to do, right? Okay, fine. I won't speak Lashon Hara from 3 to 4 while I'm making supper. Right? But we take the things that are easy. Everyone does that. That's human nature. So the Gemara said, if you can't find the things that you really need to work on, says the Gemara, look again. And if you still can't find it, you have to assume that the area that you need to strengthen in your lives is the area of Limud HaTorah, the study of Torah. That's the Gemara. We're going to come back to that in a second, but the Gemara is going to bring out an example to prove the point. True story, there was a great Amora Rav Huna, one of the greatest Amoraim in Bava. And he actually faced a challenge. He was very wealthy, and his wealth was based on a vast possession of barrels of wine. I don't know the wine business, but he had 400 barrels of wine, which the Gemara makes out to be a lot of money. So for tonight, on a Sunday night, in Miami Beach, we're going to call that $40 million worth of wine. Why? Because that is a dramatic number. Okay? This man has $40 million worth of wine. Either way, he had a lot of money in wine. Overnight, the Gemara says he wakes up the next day, it's vinegar. Every single barrel of wine that he had, his entire wealth is gone, disappeared, it turns into vinegar. I don't know the vinegar market like I don't know the wine market, but it sounded like he lost a lot of money. Vinegar is not as expensive as wine. So the Gemara says, so what do you do? The Chachamim came to visit him, Rav Achla, and a bunch of his colleagues came to visit Rav Huna and says, all right, Rav Huna, you know the Gemara better than anybody else. So what are you doing wrong? Right? This is serious. What are you doing wrong? He says, do you suspect me of doing something wrong? And they tell him back, do you suspect Hashem of sending you a challenge for no reason? So he said, I'll make you a deal. You look into my actions for me. If you find something, I'll fix it. Okay, they do. They come back and we found the problem. Now, Rav Huna, you have to understand, Rav Huna, one of the greatest tzaddikim, the thing that they found is so minute. But they found something. What was it? You didn't pay your sharecroppers properly. In those days, they had an arrangement where they would hire, they had a field, and they would hire a worker, instead of paying him an hourly or a weekly fee, what they would do is they would allow the sharecropper to keep a percentage of the crops that they worked with, and the rest would be left over to the owner of the property. But you didn't let your sharecropper take his rightful percentage. You ripped him off. Rav Huna says, all right, let me tell you what happened with that sharecropper. You're talking about Barrel of Shoyle. Let me tell you what happened with that sharecropper. That guy's the biggest thief you've ever seen. I was watching him and he would take one for me, two for me. One for me, two for me, one for you. He was ripping me off all day long. And then I saw him doing this. I didn't want to make a scene. So when he came to get his percentage, I said, listen, you got more than your share. I'm not paying you your percentage. And they said back to him, okay, you have a point, but you're stealing from a thief. That's what you're doing. He's a thief. Now you're a thief because you promised to pay a percentage. So he stole from you, but that doesn't give you right to steal back from him. It's a whole sugya in Shas. Was it right? Was it wrong? Either way, they said to him, that was your mistake. You have to do your part. If they steal, they steal, but you have to do your part. You got to pay the rightful share. The Gemara finishes the story. He pays them. And the next morning, there's two versions. Either the vinegar turned back into wine the next morning, or B, the Gemara gives a second version, it stayed vinegar, but the price of vinegar was now became very rare in the whole world, and his vinegar was now worth the same $40 million that his wine used to be worth. That's the end of the Gemara. Now, the Gemara is not just telling us, this is really cool, that's a nice miracle, right? How do we get an instant, boom, and fix your whole problems like that? Everybody's looking for that. That's not the purpose of this Gemara. The Gemara is telling us is that we, like we said, from the Medrash and Koheles, and from the Shari Tshuva, we don't see the things that we need, that we do wrong, and we don't see them, or we see them and we don't appreciate them, until the point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to send us challenges in order to make sure that we see them. Because naturally, it's very difficult for us to either see or appreciate the severity of the things that we do wrong. And that's the sugya here. The Gemara is telling us is that the reason why Rav Huna faced what he did very clearly was because he needed to fix something, and he wasn't seeing it until he was challenged. He was not going to pay that sharecropper until he had this challenge and he met Rav Acha and his people, and then they came to the conclusion what he needed to fix. The Gemara is saying that take this message that we don't see the things that we need to see in ourselves until HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we could, but a lot of times we don't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu challenges us and forces us to see those things. But what I got out of this is naturally we have to realize that I think we need to accept right here and now, that naturally we will probably not recognize the things we do wrong to the right extent and really appreciate the severity of what we're doing. Naturally, we won't see that. Rav Huna didn't, and he needed a challenge in order to bring that out of him. Just a short story. Everyone knows recently I was in federal prison, I was in federal prison for 15 months, it's a long story. I'm now in the Miami Beach Cuddle, but this is a few years ago. And I was in a halfway house. This message that I got in this halfway house was so powerful. I got a lot of things, but this one thing about the point we're talking about is it was so powerful just to see it firsthand. So the way that it works is when you're released from federal prison, you don't go directly home. You got to go to a halfway house, which means that you can go to work, you can go to davening, you can go to learning. You have to get permission for everything, medical, everything that you do, but you need to sleep in the halfway house. And they keep tabs on you every second of the day where you are. They'll call your boss. Hey, is that guy at work? Yeah, he's right in front of me. Perfect. Let me put him on the phone. No. The next step after the halfway house is they release you to home confinement. Okay, so home confinement is, again, you can go to work, you can go to davening, learning, but you can sleep at home instead of sleeping in the halfway house. But you can't go anywhere else. It's not a free-for-all. You got to be home, work, shul, and they'll call you at 3 o'clock in the morning. They will call you at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, hello, just checking in, you got to get on the phone, give them your number, whatever it is, and they hang up. It's as simple as that. So I was with a bunch of guys. We had like a group meeting like once every 2 weeks, and there was a counselor, and this is unbelievable. So this guy was on home confinement. I was too. He was on home confinement. The guy is distraught, right? I was with this guy in prison too. He was a real winner, right? Young guy, he's a wild man. And he's distraught. What happened? The counselor asked him, he says, well, what happened was, is they call you at 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, everybody knows that. So what he did was he had on, instead of being home to answer the phone, like me and my wife were like, the phone would ring, we literally jumped out of the bed and grabbed the phone. So this guy had the call on call forward so that when it rang in his house, it would switch to his cell phone, and he was out running around all night long, and he was never home. But that's what you do when you're at risk. These guys, in the half, they can send you back to prison. I mean, they have a lot of power. He didn't care. He's running around, and he has the call being forwarded to his cell phone. That's what the guy did. So why, what's happened? He's done it for weeks, no problem. But, so they called. It was a Saturday night, 3 o'clock in the morning, and his cell phone died. So the guy, the halfway house says, you have reached 786, and the guy's looking at the number. That's his cell phone, and he realized what was going on. Big trouble. They're having a meeting with him later in the day, and that's why he's distraught, because he may lose his halfway house. He may lose his home confinement. He's going to have to come back and sleep in the halfway house. He's distraught. Now, here's the key. So the counselor asks him, so what do you learn from this? Right? The guy's like, what do I learn from this? I need to change the message on my cell phone. That's what he learned from this, right? Completely, if this guy gets caught again, I guarantee you they're not going to be easy. I don't know what happened to him at that time. But if they get him a second time, they send him back to prison. He has a family, I met them, and he has, the whole situation changes. For what? But he couldn't see it. He didn't appreciate the situation that he was in. He couldn't come to that. Now, this guy's a crazy guy. But the truth is that we have to understand that at our level, Rav Huna did it, this guy did it, but there's a lot of levels in between. And at our level, there are things that we miss as well. We don't naturally have the ability to recognize the severity of our situation. And I think that that's crystal clear. That's what the Shari Tshuva is saying. That's what the Medrash is saying. And that's what the Gemara Brachos is saying, which is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to send us challenges. The Gemara that we started out with on Haman Aleph made the following statement, which is a little bit perplexing, which I'd like to go back to for a second. The Gemara said, when we are faced with these challenges, so the first thing that we need to do is we need to look into ourselves and see what are we doing wrong. We have to find the things that we're doing wrong. Why is God sending me this challenge? He's sending me a message. I'm doing something wrong, or I'm doing something wrong that I know I'm doing wrong, that I don't appreciate the severity of what I'm doing. I need to make a change. The Gemara said, but what if you don't find it? The Gemara ended up saying that you have to assume that the area that needs strengthening is the study of Torah, Limud HaTorah. That's the Gemara. I have a question on this. It's hard to understand. What if this guy that Hashem is sending the challenge to, or lady, has a real issue other than Limud HaTorah? They have a big issue that everyone else sees or that no one else sees, but it's a clear issue. Now we're talking about the guy didn't see it to begin with. That's why he's being challenged, right? And now he looks into his actions, he doesn't see it. Is it possible that there really is something that he's missing? The Gemara says, well, if you don't see it, just assume that you need to strengthen the area of study of Torah. How does that help? Maybe he's still missing the boat. Maybe there is something out there, like we described. This guy naturally probably could be missing something blatant that he really needs to fix. Just attributing it to the unique strengthening and study of Torah, how does that fix the problem? It's ignoring the issue. There may be a real issue that he needs to fix. That strengthening Limud HaTorah may not help. So how is that the end? You know what? If you can't find anything, just strengthen the area of Limud HaTorah and then you're good. How is that good? That's just ignoring the issue. There may be something out there that he's not saying. It should have said, if you can't find it, see a therapist. I don't know. I don't know if the Gemara had it in those days. But strengthening the area of Liman HaTorah is not automatically going to be the end solution. There may be something that he's really missing. Why is the Gemara so sure that that's the solution? I'd like to go to a Gemara on Daf Yud Zayin Amar Aleph. Now, the truth is that, like this. I'm going to give you a little bit of a secret. When someone goes up to speak, and there's men and women there, a lot of times they'll say, listen, there's women in the crowd, throw them a bone, say something, you know, for the ladies also. This is usually the Gemara that they'll bring. But I'm not bringing it for that, because this is a whole crowd full of, there's only ladies here, so I wouldn't have to bring it for that. I'm bringing it because I actually think that this Gemara, I was learning this recently, and I was learning Maseches Brachos, Daf Yud Zayin Amar Aleph, and I think that this Gemara is extremely powerful. I got something out of it which I didn't get the first few times that I heard it, and I'd like to share with you tonight, and I think this will help us understand a lot what's going on here. The Gemara says, men have a tremendous chus on learning Torah. Talmud Torah keneged kulam. The Gemara says, this is Yud Zayin Amar Aleph, that ladies actually get a double reward, a double promise for the study of Torah. The men get, unbelievable, Talmud Torah keneged kulam, right? That's the best thing that you can do. Ladies get a double reward. The Gemara says, fine. We have no problem with that. We're not jealous. But what did they do? Right? If they're not chayav, they're not obligated to learn Torah, so then how could they get a double reward for something they're not even obligated to do? This is the Gemara speaking. I'm just merely translating it. I should have brought an article. Right? And the Gemara answers. They do three things. They make sure that the children get to school. They send their husbands out to learn. And they wait for their husbands to come back from the yeshiva, or the Beis Medrash, or the kollel. So they send their kids, they make sure their kids get to school. We'll talk about that in a second, that's a big job. And secondly, right, they send their husbands out to learn. And third, they sit home and wait for their husbands to come back from the Beis Medrash. That is the Gemara. That's what women do. So, okay, it's nice, and after being married for a long time, I can tell you for sure that a woman is an equal partner, no question about it, without a woman subscribing to these values and the importance of Liman HaTorah, right? The especially for myself being in Kollel, the consistency of which we're required to be there day in and day out, and even for, you know, I used to work too, someone who works a full day and then goes at night to learn, that takes a lot of commitment from both parties. There's no question about it. Maybe I didn't have this view before I got married, but after being married for a long time, I can for sure tell you that a lady is equal. Without her being dedicated as much as the man, it's not going to happen. So I'm fine being equal. But this is why they're getting a double portion. This is greater than the schus of the man who's actually doing the learning itself. Equal, I have no problem. But greater, like, what is so great about this? There are crucial drops. But what is so great about this that it's deserving of being double? In order to answer this, I'd like to bring up my favorite drink. I happen to enjoy coffee. I'm sure there's a lot of people in the crowd that enjoy coffee. And any good coffee drinker understands that at any given moment they have to be ready to answer a very important question. How much sugar? Right? You have to know how much sugar you have. Now you have the hardcore coffee guys. Right? There's a guy in Kollel every single day passes me, sees me putting sugar in the coffee. He says, why spoil a good coffee? He obviously takes his coffee without any sugar, and he holds that sugar ruins a coffee fine. Then you have the people, one scoop, two scoops. I personally happen to put 3 teaspoons of sugar in my coffee. Now, 1 second. It's a larger than usual coffee. It's not a regular cup. So that I have the Contigo. It's a whole story. It's a little bit larger. 3 scoops of sugar. That's what it is. It is what it is. Now, why in the world am I telling you this? I will tell you like this. Is it absolutely crucial for me to have the 3 scoops of sugar in my coffee? I would say yes, right? It is crucial for me. I don't enjoy it without it, but I will admit, I'm willing to admit, that it's not like life or death. I'm not waking up in a cold sweat at 2 o'clock in the morning, oh my gosh, is there enough sugar for me to have 3 scoops of sugar in my coffee tomorrow morning? And I'm not, you know, going to sleep and then jumping out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning running to the store. If it's there, I put it in. It's not like the life or death. I don't have to have it. The point that I'm making is that there's different levels in this world of things that are important. And 3 scoops of sugar in the morning is important, but everyone's willing to admit that there are things that are much more important than that. And here's the point. The point is like this. The point is, there's a Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah which really says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, right? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, we say it in Kiddush Shabbos Shabbos, Yom HaShishi VaYichulo Shemayim VaAretz, the Gemara says HaShishi, there's a drasha from that pasuk, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually made a condition with the world at the time of creation. This again is a Gemara. I'm not quoting you any local philosopher. This is a Gemara. And the Gemara says that there was a condition. The world is not just created, it's conditioned. Hashem told the world, I'm creating you. But understand that you're only being created on condition that Klal Yisrael accepts the Torah. Because that is the entire purpose of creation. Now, I will tell you like this. Like we said, there are different levels of things that we hold are important. And I think the million-dollar question that we need to ask ourselves, that we need to challenge ourselves with during these Aseres Yemei Teshuvah is as follows. For us, now that we understand that the world is created in that condition, is Torah as a foundation of our lives something that we do if it's convenient? Like if I have sugar in the house, I'll put 3 scoops of it in my coffee. Is it something that we're, if I'm able to squeeze it in, then yes, we do want Torah involved in our house because I'll feel better. I won't feel as guilty. My parents raised me this way. My rebbe will be proud. And if it's convenient, if I can get it in, then I'm willing to do it. Or is Torah something that we realize the entire world is created for? Which obviously raises the level of importance to the most. Right? The entire existence of the world was only for the acceptance that Klal Yisrael did of the Torah. Do we live with that as a foundation and core of our lives? Or if it's convenient and it works out between 8 and 8:30, yeah, we do want some Torah in our lives because we'll feel better. I think the now it's a very slight tweak, right? Because a lot of those two people on the two different sides of the coin may do very similar things. But the philosophy and perspective is worlds apart. One person does it when it's convenient, but the other realizes that their entire world and being and everything that their family stands on is completely based on the foundation of Torah. When a woman makes sure that her kids get the carpool, 9 o'clock in the morning, but then they have to be back for 9:15 to get the other one back. There's a 2 o'clock pickup for the little kids. Be back 4 o'clock for the other kids. There's a mishmar Thursday night, 5:30 back and forth. That's someone, that's not convenient. That's someone who realizes that this is the foundation of our lives. And therefore they're willing to do crazy things, to drive all over the place to make sure that their kids are there. For 20 minutes they're there, half an hour back, into school, different times. That's someone who realizes that Torah is not just convenience, it's the foundation of our lives. That's what the woman can do. When a woman sends her husband back to Kollel after a full day's work and she'd like nothing more than to spend a few minutes with her husband, but she sends him back to the Kollel to learn, that's not convenient. That's somebody that realizes that the Torah is the foundation of the world and that's why they're really willing to make that sacrifice. When they sit up waiting for them to come home, that's not convenient. That's someone who recognizes and realizes that the foundation of their world is based on Torah. And you know what happens when a lady shows those things? The entire family takes that cue, and that sets the foundation and tone for the entire family. So yes, greater than learning Torah is if you set your entire family's perspective and ideals based on a foundation of Torah. Realizing, everyone in the family realizes that you know why she's doing all these things? Because she realizes that the world stands on this. And that's why she's willing to make such a sacrifice. It's not convenience. This is the real deal. And that spreads, it sets a tone for the family. The entire family starts living off of that foundation. She gets double reward. That's Shana the Gemara. With this, I'd like to go back and try to answer up the question that we started with before. We saw a Gemara in Hamadav. The Gemara said that when we're challenged, we got to look into our actions and find the things that we've done wrong. Okay, what if we can't find anything that we've done wrong? That doesn't mean that there isn't anything, but we just can't find it. The Gemara says, then you have to assume that you need to strengthen. Liman HaTorah needs to be strengthened. So we ask the question, but maybe the guy really has something that he's missing, and just pushing it off and saying that Liman HaTorah is where the strengthening is needed, maybe that's just missing the boat and ignoring the issue. I'd like to say a pshat on this Gemara. What I think pshat on the Gemara is, we're not ignoring the problem. We realize that there really may be an issue out there that you haven't seen. Just because you say you don't see anything doesn't mean there isn't anything. We understand that it's very likely that there is something that you're not seeing. Says the Gemara, not to assume that the issue is Torah. But study Torah, because when you set your foundation and strengthen your core of your world and make it based on Torah, you know what's going to happen? you're going to come to the realization on your own, and you're going to start realizing that, you know what? Not only am I strengthened in Torah, I found a mistake. I now found the real thing that was out there that I needed to work on. Because my foundations are now in line. Did anyone ever put tile on a floor? I mean, I knew or had a contract to do it. I don't do it either, right? So you want to make sure, even I know this, it's got to be straight. I don't care how it looks, what color it is, but I will admit that it's got to be straight because you can trip. You want to have a straight floor. Now, how do you know if your floor is straight, right? So maybe you're crooked and the floor is straight, or maybe the floor is straight, right? So what you have is something called a level, or there's different instruments that you can use to set the standard that this is straight, and if the tiles mark up with this, then I know the tile's straight. We saw from Reuven in the dungeon, we saw from the Medrash and Kohelis, we saw from people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to challenge, that we have the ability to just miss the boat and not see the things that we do wrong or not appreciate the severity of the things that we do wrong. But you know what we have as a solution? We have the Torah as a foundation. When we make sure that we recognize that the Torah is the core of our lives, then we have that tool. That's the standard. Without that, everyone has ideas. You turn on any news channel to look about politics, and every single guy on that politics station will swear that he has the right view. He has the right moral values, the right political values, and the next guy comes, that guy is completely wrong, and I am dime a dozen. They're a dime a dozen. They make good arguments, every single one. Every time you listen to Fox News, you're convinced. CNN, you're convinced. These guys all have good arguments. You can be... But you know what they're all missing? That there's no bar, there's no level that you can make sure who's right and who's wrong. What we have is we have the Torah. The Torah does this. It's a standard that we can work off of. Says the Gemara, if you can't find the thing that you're really missing, the area that you really need to work on, then strengthen your lives, your foundation on Torah. Because then you know what's going to happen? Not that that's the answer. That's going to lead you to finding the real mistake, because now you're straight. Now you don't have a svara like this, logic like this, argument like this. It's not a debate. We have a standard. The whole world is created with the standard, with the Torah. And if you strengthen your lives that way, then you will be sure to now realize the things that you're missing. And you know what else happens? When we realize the mistakes that we've made, when we make Torah our foundation and strengthen that, what really happens is, we start really appreciating what it means to do an Avera. My entire life circulates around the Torah, and I did this thing wrong. How can I live with myself? It's another life. How can I have a fire in my kitchen? I'm not willing to finish my phone call. How can I have this Avera? It's connected. It's against the basic foundation of my entire life. It's a different world. And then we will no longer be that fool with an escape route sitting there. We're going to jump at the moment that something we're offered, what we call the executive power, to overcome the mistakes that we've made and get a second chance through tshuva and tefillah. The same power that the entire Klal Yisrael had in the time of Purim, each and every one of us has. Of course, I'm running to take it because I now realize clearly through my foundation, the stronger the foundation on Torah, the more clear we will see the mistakes that we've made. We won't have to wait to be challenged by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we won't have to miss the escape route altogether. We're going to be in tune and appreciate the severity of our position. I'd like to conclude with the following mashal. So Rav Yaakov and his wife Rachel were extremely outstanding citizens of the town. They were very wealthy, very learned, very pious. They had everything that they wanted. Ruchnius, Uvagashmius. Unfortunately, there was one thing that they couldn't have, or they didn't have. They didn't have a child. And this is something that was driving them crazy, because they had all of the means to provide for a child. They had all the rebbeim on speed dial. They were giving tzedakah, they were supporting all the yeshivas. They were very wealthy, they could afford any type of clothing or teacher or tutor. And they were ready to have a child and to train a child, give everything the child would need to thrive. They just didn't have a child. And finally, after 20 years, you can imagine the excitement when they were blessed with Mendel, their baby boy. This child was spared no expense. He was given the best teachers. He was given the new clothing that came out. He looked amazing. He had every new sitter in different colors. And he had shtenders. And 3 years old, they got him his own seat on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He had his own lulav and esrog, right? When he was a baby, they had it laying next to him. Chazan Ish set, not like a regular set. Top, right? Everything that this kid wanted, but in the right way. They were really, they were spiritually in tune, They were physically into it. Everything the child wanted. It was raised in a real wholesome environment. But unfortunately, when the child started turning 13, 14, he had other ideas and he started hanging around with the wrong friends. And he was making really bad choices. He wasn't finishing his classes. He wasn't doing his work. He didn't care. He was taking a really poor attitude. His mother was so distraught by seeing the way that this child, after 20 years waiting for their only child, the way that he was growing up, she couldn't bear it. She was older anyways. And unfortunately, she passed away. The father now realized that this is serious. You know, he has one last chance, and he tried to getting a few people to intervene and talk to the child, but nothing was working. He was only getting worse and worse. He was getting closer with the bad group of friends, and really taking him away from everything, responsibility, from his learning, from his ruchnius. He was just leaving everything completely, just throwing everything in the gutter. He had everything at his fingertips. His parents were the wealthiest people in town. After his father realized that there was nothing he could do, so he started putting his affairs in order, and he also got very sick, and unfortunately, he passed away. Mendel came to the Levaya, but the truth is, he really came to the Levaya for one reason. He just wanted to know one thing: how much, right? That's what he came for. But he did his thing, he said Kaddish, he knew Kaddish very well. And at the Levaya, he went over to his father's personal assistant, and he said, all right, so how do we do this, right? So his father's personal assistant said, here's what your father wanted. He is giving you $10,000 now, just to be able to make it for a little while. And then, in 1 year, you can come to your father's house. I will let you in at 8 o'clock in the morning, in exactly 1 year from today on the Yahrzeit. And I'll let you in for the day, and then that's going to be all. You'll never be able to come back, that'll be all. Very strange. This is not, he was just hoping to take a check, and he actually had a car waiting outside. He was going to, you know, go to a party. But he got $10,000, not zero. But he figured like this: his father is a smart guy, probably just wants him to say Kaddish for the year. So he's giving him like an incentive. Say Kaddish for the year, you'll come in here, you'll come to my house, then I'll give you all the money, millions, you'll be good to go. He figured that was probably the arrangement. He rationally hoped that was the arrangement. He had nothing else going for him. At this point, he's 18 years old, and he has not a stitch going for him in this world other than his irresponsible friends. So he goes with his friends. $10,000 lasted him like a few weeks in his irresponsible lifestyle. And now he was in trouble. So he has to borrow money from a friend. And for a while it was working. But then he has no income. Can't pay anyone back. No one wants to lend him any money. Everyone says, don't lend money to that guy who keeps on claiming that he's going to be a millionaire in like 11 months. Because, I don't know, it's a story. In the meantime, we've never got paid back a dime. And the rumors spread about him, to the point that he had to start borrowing money from some dangerous groups, because that was the only thing he had left. He needed to live. So he started doing that. And again, he was still living his crazy lifestyle. He promised them, listen, I'm telling you, a year after my father died, you meet me outside of that house. He gave him the address. You'll be paid. But time was going. 8 months, 9 months, people want to be paid back. And these are dangerous groups. A week before the Yahrzeit, a group, you know, cornered him in the middle of a corner in an alleyway. And they said, listen, you have a week. Right? We've been talking about this for months. You owe us a lot of money. We'll be outside of that house. If you don't have the money, you're finished. You're dead. And they punch him, and you know, they rattled him up a little bit, threw him on the ground, and they left him. Serious situation. A week goes by, he can barely sleep. Who knows what's going to happen? He gets to his father's house, and he's there at 7 o'clock, an hour early. He waits. 7:30, he sees a Lincoln town car slowly pull up, you know, across the street. He knows exactly who it is. And this is business, right? This is do or die. 8 o'clock comes, the assistant walks out exactly on time as promised, and he's let inside the house. He doesn't know where to run. He's trying to figure out, like, well, how do you do this? How do you find millions of dollars in a house? So he runs to his father's office, and on his father's desk is the following letter. To my dear son, if you are reading this, then it is 1 year since my passing. I am assuming that you are now in a very difficult financial situation. You probably blew through the $10,000 that I originally left you, and you then probably needed to borrow money to the point that as we speak, there are probably dangerous people waiting outside this house. I could now leave you the fortune that your mother and I amassed, but what's the point? You are in this position because of your poor choices that have made you, your lack of responsibility that you live with. Even if you could save yourself today with the money that I leave you, you would inevitably find yourself back in the same precarious position. So I therefore offer you the following. I have left you a noose in the next room. Please use it to hang yourself. At least die in the comfort of our home rather than get ripped up to shreds by the groups waiting outside our house. I never wanted this for you. Your mother and I always loved you and always will. But at this time, this is the best option. Love your father.
He doesn't know what to do. He can barely stand. Besides the fact that he's not getting the money, he can't afford to walk out like this. So, why would his father would say something like that? What father tells their kid to kill themselves? What kind of a crazy guy is this? I knew it, he starts saying. This guy's a crazy... But then he starts thinking, well, you know what? At this desperate stage in his life, finally some truth starts to sink into his heart. He's absolutely right. If he left me millions of dollars, I would pay the people off. In a year, depending how much it was, in a few years, I'd be right back in the same position, and then who's going to bail me out? He's absolutely right. In all honesty, I can't argue with him. That is the way that I live my life. Those are the decisions that I've made. So he's pacing back and forth what to do. He looks out the window. He sees the people, you know, getting impatient. He's right. He slowly starts making his way to the next room where the noose is waiting. When he puts that noose around his neck, for the first time in a long time, real tears of regret and remorse start flowing down his eyes. What kind of an opportunity did he squander? Every other person in the entire country would die for his position to have all means to start a career, to learn in Kollel his entire life, to raise a family. He had it all. He had the tutors. He could have done anything. And now he's standing on a chair with a noose around his neck with a bunch of mobsters waiting outside for him. What kind of a position did he get himself into? The remorse that he felt at that moment was inconceivable, real tears falling down his eyes. He stood there for a few minutes, real tshuva, real regret. And he finally says, the time has come. He screams out, Shema Yisrael, for the last time, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. He jumps off the chair and he hits the ground with a loud thud. He thinks to himself, my father couldn't even have left me a good rope. But he finds at the other end of the rope the following, another letter. If you are reading this note, then I know that you have taken my advice and are ready to take your own life. At this point, it then must be crystal clear to you the opportunity that you have blown. You now have an understanding of what you really want in this world, and you are therefore now finally ready to start your new life. Use that moment of clarity right before jumping off that chair as a guide to what you can and should accomplish in this world. I am now ready to pass you our fortune. Pay off all of the hoodlums that you got involved with and then use the rest to establish yourself and build a family in the ways of your father. Fathers. Love, father. You can imagine the second chance that he took. He ran out of the house, he took the money, he paid off the people, and now he got involved in the right crowd. He had a second chance, a second opportunity, but it was only now that he was ready to do so. During this time, we are in a similar situation. Mendel looked out the window and he saw there's a car out there that's going to kill him. He just cannot afford to walk out of the house without any money. It's death. We cannot afford to leave these days of Aseret Yemei Teshuva without the basic things that we cry for. We need health for our families. We can't leave without it. We need parnasa. We need a cure for the sick. We just can't leave these days without it. These are basics. It's like Mendel walking out of that house. We can't leave these days without these basic things that we ask Hashem every single moment of the day. But Hashem, if He was writing us a letter, this is what it would sound like. My dear children, there is nothing that I want more than to give you the things that you ask for. I want it more than you want it. But what's the purpose? You live lives that are spiritually unsustainable because you're going to continue to make the same mistakes like Reuven in the dungeon, like each and every one of us who don't realize the severity of a fire and of the things that we do wrong on a daily basis.
You'll be good for a year, but then what? You'll be in the same predicament next year. What's the purpose? HaKadosh Baruch Hu would write in his letter. And we only have one thing we can answer. And we don't have to wait until we're standing on a chair with a noose around our neck. We can do it right now. The thing that we can do, says the Gemara on Ham and Aleph and Brachos, is we can re-establish and re-strengthen the core foundation of our lives based on Torah. Because then we can be assured that anything else that we need to fix will come. That's what the Gemara says. Everything that we've missed all this time, we're not going to be blind like Reuven. We won't be a fool like him either. We're now going to appreciate the severity of a fire. We're going to jump when we find it. We can tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we can look at him during this time. And we can say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're not unsustainable. We're not unsustainable. We have sustainable lives because although we're not perfect now, but we can assure you that we recognize the severity of the predicament that we got ourselves into. We realize our dangerous situation and we're ready to make change. Maybe not at this moment we're going to be perfect, but we're at least ready to commit to you to continuously look into ourselves and make the appropriate changes. You're giving the things that we ask for to somebody who is deserving, who's not going to squander it. When we do that, when we recognize the things that we need to fix, that's a whole other story. Now we jump to take that executive power that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us with this tefillah and ask Him to give us the things that we ask for to people that are sustainable. When we take that opportunity to do tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, now I'm ready to give you a second opportunity, a second chance. We run out of the house like Mendel did, with completely free after Yom Kippur. New! We have everything new, all the means in the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. We can start fresh. What an opportunity that He gives us. It's a gaping hole on the bottom of a dungeon. Let us make sure that we utilize every moment and realize what we have in front of us. The tshuva and tefillah, the escape route sitting right in front of us. Let us not be fools and miss it. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will for sure grant us a Gemar Chasima Teva.